Hello, and welcome to JK It's Magic, a bi-weekly podcast in which two bookish besties read YA fantasy through a critical lens. Why? Because critique is our fangirl love language, and because talking about books is pretty magical. I'm Jessie.
And I'm Kelly. And today we're discussing City of Bones by Cassandra Clare, the first book in the Mortal Instruments series.
City of Bones is the story of Clary. She has an overprotective mother who's kidnapped, and Clary is plunged into a magical world that has been hiding right in front of her entire life.
Best synopsis ever. Initial reactions.
This is probably the third or fourth time I've read this book, but it's been a few years, and I forgot about how much I love this story and I love these characters. It was pretty good. I liked it a lot.
I honestly don't know how I've gone this long without reading this series or anything by Cassandra Clare. I have no idea. She's such a big name, and the series is so popular, and there was like a movie, which I saw.
And now a TV show.
And this came out in my formative years. It's from 2007, so this oversight on my part kind of blows my mind. I have no idea how it happened.
The oldest book we've read so far.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's 11 years old.
Wow.
It's a small child.
True. I really enjoyed the book, though, besides that mind-blowing reflection. I really enjoyed the book, and it's some of the most vibrant prose I've seen in YA, I think, in a while. I don't know, it was just like very full of detail, which I liked. And I liked the banter between all the teenage characters. Thought that was cute. I'm excited to keep reading the rest of the series. And I'm lucky all the books are out, so I don't have to do any of that agonizing waiting like I'm doing for Kingdom of Ash or King of Scars.
Yeah, I had to wait like for a lot of them. So I'm really jealous that you get them all at once. Just kind of nice. Good for you. It's time to talk about all things world building in Through the Wardrobe. So this story takes place in our world. It takes place in New York City, some place you and I have both been before and seen. I hadn't been there when I read these books, but now that I have been there, it's like a more full story to me. Like I can kind of picture some of where these places would be, which was kind of cool. And so I really like the sentiment that they say a few times throughout the book, and you hear it a lot in the movie that all the stories are true. Because I like this idea of like, it's our world, and we already have all these myths and legends about like warlocks and vampires and werewolves, but we think they're all just stories, but that they're actually real.
I like how it synthesizes all those different types of otherworldly beings and puts them in one place.
They kind of fit like all those stereotypes we have of those stories sense. Maybe not Magnus as much, because I don't feel like we get as many stories about, like, I know we have Harry Potter, but like male magicians, witches, warlocks, whatever.
Genderqueer warlocks.
I know. We don't get those stories, so I kind of like this. I think there's a Magnus book.
I'm buying it.
Or series.
In 2 hours when we're done with this.
It might be a graphic novel.
Even better.
Oh my goodness. So this takes place in a time when people had house phones and no internet on their cell phones. And because I read this book when it came out, all of that was fine. But reading it in 2018, I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like,
why can't they just call each other?
Well, they're like calling Simon to be like, hey, can you Google this for me? And I was like, wait, what?
Instead of being like, hey, Siri.
Yeah, yeah. Or, well, I can't say because then my phone will do it, but like asking Google to do things for you.
Right, yeah, exactly.
It's kind of weird.
And what's funny, I like that you wrote this, because there's this point near the end during this very dramatic scene with lots of exposition when Luke says, quote, hand me the phone book. And I laughed so loud. I lolled in real life, IRL. I lolled IRL. But it's kind of inevitable when an author chooses to do a contemporary urban fantasy that not everything is going to age well.
Yeah.
But completely fantastical or temporally distant stories, like medieval adjacent stories, right, don't run into this issue.
No, not at all. And I'm sure stories that are like contemporary magic fantasy, urban fantasies now will seem really weird in 10 years because they're going to be like, oh my God, we have like cell phones in our like brains now.
Yeah. So that's something. It's totally a double-edged sword, because the things, those little detail aspects about the tech at the time,
yeah,
that make the world seem so vibrant and real, like when you're really close to the time of publication, 10 years or 11 years out, then kind of date the story in a particular way.
A lot of this Shadowhunter lore and legends, the stories, seem to come from Christianity, but at the same time, they aren't necessarily religious, so Shadowhunters aren't, at least not the ones that we meet. And Jace says this thing where they're in the cathedral, getting weapons, getting ready to take on the vampires. He says, there might be a god, Clary, and there might not, but I don't think it matters. Either way, we're on our own. And I think the book does a good job of showing this. We don't actually see any... We see demons, but we don't see any angels. We don't see any interference from a higher being.
And Jace mentions that he's never met or knows of anyone who's ever seen an angel.
Exactly. Which is interesting because the demons play such a big role in the story, but we don't see a higher power that seems to care about what's going on Earth at all.
Yeah, it's also interesting that the angels themselves aren't the higher power, that they seems to be like a god who controlled the angels.
Right.
I don't know, then is there a devil that controls the demons? Or did at one point? I don't know. I think that I'm missing a lot of the deep cuts of the backstory.
Maybe. It's hard because I have read them all, and I know what's going to happen later. And I know, like, there's probably most people have read these books.
This is the first
except
time.
Except for you.
This is the first time where Jesse's the one with all the knowledge.
Yeah, this never happens. And it feels wrong because I feel like I know so much, but I can't say anything. I won't spoil it. But yeah, we don't see any interference from a big good person or a big bad person.
Right.
Either way. And I found that really interesting, even though...
Yeah, because the magic system isn't secular.
But no.
It's religious, but it's not just Christian, because it plays out along racial, cultural, and linguistic boundaries. Jace explains how the cultures and religions across the world have different names for demons.
Well, and he says we could have gone to a synagogue or a temple. Like, there were a lot of options for... They just happened to be closest to a Catholic church.
Right. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say about
that. I don't
know.
It's hard because we get the story of Lucifer a little bit with Valentine, because his last name is Morgenstern, which comes from, like, Falling Star, I think he says.
It's German for Falling Star.
Yeah. And so too much of the story seems tied up in Christianity for it to actually be possible that it incorporates the other religions.
Yeah, I think that was mainly just a nod.
Yeah.
But, and then also it makes me wonder how the book is trying to, like, lead readers to interpret Jace's agnosticism / non-belief. And are we supposed to agree with it? Are we supposed to critique him for it? I don't understand.
It feels like we're supposed to critique him for it. Like, how could you see and fight and kill demons and not believe in something higher that cares about us? But at the same time, it kind of makes sense. Like, all these bad things are happening and there's no higher intervention.
And he's had, like, the shittiest life.
Oh my God, like, the worst life.
So I don't blame this guy.
No, me either. Maybe we're supposed to see, like... I wonder if we're supposed to see it as the Shadowhunters are the divine intervention. The angel, Raziel, gave them the power to fight the demons. And so that is God's way of intervening. Like, that's what their point is. I don't know.
Questions that we don't have answers to.
What do people think? Like, what? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
The religious aspect of this world makes it very rich and interesting, but also then makes me... have a lot of conflicting thoughts,
especially because, like, Christian religion in particular for me, from personal experience, is, like, not great. So I'm kind of like, yeah, I get where Jace is coming from. Like, you've had this shitty life and all these bad things have happened to you and no one's intervening on your behalf, and if demons exist and the world was created by a god, then God created these evil things. It just doesn't all add up. You know, God can't be all good and have created evil. Those are my thoughts.
Yep.
In the book, there's a saying, the law is hard, but it is the law. And I was wondering what you thought about this, because it kind of creates this weird dynamic where we have to accept that the law is morally correct, but at the same time, the law is what decides what's correct. And I don't know. For some reason, this really... stuck out to me a lot.
It stuck out to me because it's just blatantly wrong to me.
When it's almost like a tautology, like it's the law, so it's the law.
Yeah, it's a circular reasoning almost. Yeah, the laws aren't necessarily morally correct. We know that. I mean, slavery was legal for however many, like hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
The prison system's legal now. Like, state-sanctioned slavery basically exists right now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And also, the law is hard, but it's the law. Yeah, the law might be hard, but how is the law enforced? That's right. Also definitely skewed along all sorts of different identity lines.
Yeah.
So you can't say that, like, maybe the law is hard, but it's the law. Maybe the law is correct, but then you can't tell me that the enforcement of the law is correct.
Right. Which we, like, kind of see now. Like, law enforcement does a pretty shitty job sometimes at, like, enforcing the law.
Right. With, like, marijuana convictions, for example. 4% of white people are convicted and, like, 77% of, like, black people are convicted.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What?
So the law isn't, like, it's a weird thing to say, like, it's the law. It's hard, but it's the law. And I don't know, that really, like,
it's a way of absolving those in power of any sort of accountability or wrongdoing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I didn't like that. And I have a lot of problems with the Clave in general, but like that is one of the big ones. Like, you all decided the law. So like, how do you change something that you've decided is like the moral arbiter, you know?
Exactly. You have the power to change it. I have a question about the Clave in general. What is it? Is it like a council? Is it, but then we have the Silent Brothers that are also a council. I don't get it.
It becomes more clear in the next book. Alec and Isabel's parents come back and then we get a lot more interaction with the Clave. And I think the second book creates a better understanding of what and who they are and what they do.
And like who gets to be a part of it, because they seem to be like the decision makers who are essentially like they're a government / police force.
If I remember correctly, which is saying a lot because it's been a while, I think the Clave is like the Shadow Hunters all fall under the law of the Clave, but the people in charge is like a circle of people, kind of like the Circle.
So it's like an oligarchy.
Exactly.
Are those people, do like they inherit their positions? Is this a democratic system?
So. It's a bunch of old people, I'm pretty sure. Like, which is kind of surprising. Yeah,
shocker.
Yeah, it's always the old people ruining everyone's lives. They're the worst. Yeah, so if I remember correctly, that's the Clave. It's old people who are kind of in charge. Like, I'm pretty sure we meet like maybe Luke's mom or sister or something, and like she's a member of the Clave, or I don't really remember.
They're definitely portrayed as one of the villains, I would say.
The Clave.
But we can talk about that later.
It'll get worse in upcoming books. There's this weird part where Hodge talks about the Clave destroying evidence of the Circle, like their manifesto kind of thing. And I thought this was kind of weird in the way that it allows history to repeat itself, because Valentine comes back and there's so much mystery surrounding who he is and what he's done.
And what actually went down. Doesn't seem like there's an objective historical account of what happened. I mean, objectivity is a fiction, but.
Right. Yeah, because we really just get Hodge's account of events and Luke's account of events. That's really the only people we see. So I don't know if if destroying that allows history to repeat itself, or does it allow people like Jocelyn and Hodge to start over with a clean slate?
I think that there's a way to have accountability without erasing the bad stuff that happened. I'm thinking of the most obvious parallel here for me is the Holocaust and how they mm-hmm. teach that history so much, obviously to differing degrees depending on where you learn,
right,
where you go to school. But that with events like that that seem to be really, that are like super transformational, I would say, in history, seem to be taught, but only certain ones, right? Because it's not like genocide of indigenous peoples is really taught so mm-hmm. that we stop doing it.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't really know the answer to that. I think that it doesn't really allow Hodge to start over. And Jocelyn chose to leave the Clave. It didn't like give her anything.
I guess it's kind of like in the United States, how we don't destroy evidence of like the Confederacy, but we don't teach it in such a way as that it's like helpful to anyone. You know what I mean? Like, we don't, obviously the Confederacy, it's not similar to the Holocaust, but in Germany, like they keep remembrances of things that have happened, whereas we're just like, wipe the slate clean. Like, we're not going to punish the people who, like, committed treason against their government. So in that way, maybe that's the problem. Like, if you pretend like nothing happened, it allows people like Valentine to come back. Kind of in the United States, how we didn't punish or really do anything to the people who were part of the Confederacy, like their generals and leadership. And so it allows things like white supremacy to like remain in the United States and be such a problem.
Yeah, I don't think the Klan handled the circle very well, because there's a lot of misinformation about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't effectively like combat against those sorts of ideologies if you don't know the history.
Right.
And if you can't like share that with younger generations and being like, hey, don't do that, that's bad.
Yeah, exactly. As someone who grew up in the South, like, they don't teach the Civil War in a way that I think really portrays like how bad or how much of a division it caused then, and how it continued to allow things like segregation and Jim Crow and now the prison system and, you know, shitty people in charge of our government continue on with their lives as if, you know, it was okay. Yeah, I think that's what the Klave did. They're the Confederacy.
Well, yeah, because I guess if you distributed all that information, you would see the problems with the Klave itself. And mm-hmm. So obviously the system isn't going to teach you how to overthrow it.
Right. No, they don't want that. But it was an interesting part to me. I don't know what they should have done. I guess we don't really know what, like, Jace and Alec and Isabel are learning. Like, Hodge is their tutor, but I don't know what he teaches them. Like, do they learn Shadowhunter history?
Well, they didn't know about why he was... I don't think they knew his whole backstory.
No, they did not.
So, clearly he's not that honest of a teacher.
They need better school systems in the Klave.
Yeah, they definitely do.
Like, just one guy teaching them all the stuff seems like a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Wands out. This is the segment where we discuss all things magic. It struck me as interesting that the magic system is written and not oral for shadow hunters who rely on runes. But at the same time, Jace says they don't use magic because only demons use magic, or people with demon or beings with demon blood use magic. But then what are the runes? It's confusing to me. Anyway, I thought it was also important that the runes are written on the skin and that they produce visible scars after repeated use. I found this really interesting. And so the magic, or appealing to some sort of supernatural power, I guess, causes bodily pain and leaves lasting marks. And it makes me think that the author is definitely drawing from the history of tattoo and the ritualization of tattoos, which are, in many indigenous cultures, mark rites of passage and milestones in a person's life. I was wondering what you thought about that.
Yeah, I didn't really think of it that way until you wrote it. Because it's a weird thing to use runes, something that is associated with magic, but at the same time say, like, the shadow hunters don't have magic. I always found that, like, kind of confusing as I was reading.
It lets them heal better or block a path.
Or makes them invisible. Like,
also, don't tell me a glamour isn't magic. Yeah. They're doing glamours all over.
I don't know. To me, I'm like, no, that's magic. That is what magic is. Like, you're doing magic? I don't know why they think
maybe
it's
not
magic.
Maybe they do magic but don't have it. Maybe that's a difference.
Maybe their symbols themselves are the magic.
Yeah, I think that probably is it. What do you think about the connection to tattoo?
Oh, yeah, I think that's definitely, like... And it makes sense because the shadow hunters get their first runes when they come of age. So, yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, the tattoos show up on the very buff, shirtless dude who's on the cover of my book.
I think it's supposed to be Jace.
It's very romance novel-y.
So romance novel-y. I didn't think of that when I was, 17 years old reading this book, but now as an older person being out in the world reading this book in public, I was like, oh, this looks like a romance novel.
City of Bones.
Yeah, I get no shits. Yeah, I know exactly.
Just kidding, there were no boners in this book.
Speaking of magic, I thought of Church and Hugo, Church the cat, kind of similar to familiars, like a witch's familiars. They're like doing the work for people, you know.
Yeah, they clearly have like a higher than regular animal sensibility. Or maybe these shadow hunters are the only ones who have like access to animals in that way. Because who knows, maybe Lainey the podcat, who is currently in her crate because she couldn't behave and stop meowing, also has access to that sort of, I don't know. We don't know that she's true. Not capable of communication or thought in different ways. Maybe we just can't access it.
That's true. All I know for sure is she doesn't know when I'm saying, hey, please quiet down.
We're recording.
We're recording. Please quiet down. She said no.
And the Hugo, who turns out to be a pair with the other dude, the other raven.
Oh, yeah.
They're Valentine's ravens.
Yeah. But we don't see that other raven.
No, not in this book anyway.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But those reminded me of like Odin's two ravens.
There's so much like mythology and like in this book. I really enjoyed that.
I like how it's a melting pot. Scare quotes. Large wink. Yeah. Eye roll.
So in the story, magic is associated with people with demon blood. And on page 101, Jace says witches and warlocks can only use magic because they have demon blood. And I thought that was a really like religious view to take. I took it as a Christian view because I don't really know that much about other religions that aren't Christian or like magic based. To think that someone who can do magic has some kind of demonic something in them.
Yeah, then tell me what the Shadowhunters are. Like, I don't get it. I'm really conflicted about that.
Their power comes from the angels, so that makes them okay.
So that's okay, but it's not magic. It's like miracles. I don't know.
Oh, I didn't think of it as miracles, and that like makes me like, ugh.
I have no idea. It's this weird distinction, but that's not super clear in the book what the difference is. It's clear that we're supposed to see that there's a difference, but it's not articulated really.
Maybe we see it more in later books. Again, I don't remember. I realize I don't remember a lot of things right now.
You're no fun. I want spoilers.
I know. And I can only give you very few and very big ones. And I will not.
I just want to give a shout out to Taro that makes a cameo in this book.
Kind of important in this book.
Super important. And I've gotten really into Taro in the past few months. And so I was like, ooh, Ace of Cups. That brings through a whole other like slew of associations for me because I'm like learning more about the different like interpretations.
Do you know what it means?
Ace of Cups is supposed to be like the cup suit is associated with water, which is associated more with like your emotions and how you like experience the world on like a sentimental basis. And so Ace of Cups is supposed to be like a signal of like abundance and creation and
which
like
makes
creative
sense because the cup creates the Shadowhunters.
Right.
Oh, very interesting. I didn't even think of that, like reading it.
Yeah. Oh, that's shout cool. out to Lindsay Mack for her tarot school that I'm currently doing.
Wands away. Now we're going to talk about conflicts, villains, and good versus evil in a segment we're calling Get Me Kylo Ren. So Simon doesn't like cats, and I think that makes him a villain. Yeah. I don't think I disliked Simon my first read through, and then when I saw that when I was reading, like, and it's pretty early in the book, I was like, oh man, Simon, I can't like you now.
I definitely am more of a dog person. Part of that is my allergies to cats.
But you don't hate them.
No, I don't hate them. I think that's silly.
It is silly. And fuck you, Simon. We don't really get Clary makes a statement that because of the things that have happened with Jace emotionally with Valentine, that he is that he obviously abused Jace as a child physically. But I think it kind of forgets the part where like parents can be also emotionally abusive. I think Valentine is definitely abusing one or both of his children.
Absolutely. Well, if he's like Michael Wayland the whole time, supposedly, and Jace does give like drop little nuggets of information about his upbringing, and he says something like, my father taught me that words are weapons and that like love is bad and it makes you weak and all that stuff, and no, that's definitely emotionally abusive. Also, Jace's dad killed his pet,
which is
in
like,
front of him,
which is like one of the signs of someone who abuses their children is they don't let them have pets.
Worse. Yeah. You let him have a pet. It's so fucking manipulative.
Well, he didn't want it to be a pet. It was supposed to be like a tool.
So he gave him an animal. And then like, I'm sure he watched his child form an emotional relationship to an animal, as one does when it like cohabitates with you and is your pet. and then you like talk for it and give it 15 million pet names and don't actually use its real name. I'm speaking from experience.
Yeah, lots of experience.
So he literally, then he like brings him into his office, the dad does, brings him into his office and is like, actually, I'm going to wring your pet's neck in front of you and like make an example of this. He didn't have, he could have just like told him from the outset, this is not a pet.
Yeah.
But he didn't, because he specifically wanted to break his kid. That is so messed up.
Yeah. And I think in a way, I don't think that this is like a more powerful way to show a parental abuse. But I think it is a really good way to show how parents can be emotionally abusive and how it'll lead people to believe that they're also physically abusive, and for us to like come to our own conclusions about like what emotional abuse can lead to from a parent. It was real sad, and I feel real bad for Jace.
Very sad.
That's why I like him so much, probably.
And Jamie Campbell Bauer.
Okay, yeah. Mostly I love Jamie Campbell Bauer, but I read this book before that, and Jace, when I'm reading it this time around, really reminds me of Rassand, and so I feel like so bad for him. It like hurts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can't wait till we get to talk about those books. I want to talk about this quote that goes from page 175 to 176, where Jace is explaining the difference between downworlders and demons to Clary. And I'm going to read this quote, and I want to unpack it a little bit with you.
Let's do it.
But are all demons evil? Clary said. I mean, if all vampires aren't evil and all werewolves aren't evil, maybe. Jace interrupts her. Obvi, me interrupting. And he says, it's not the same thing at all. Vampires, werewolves, even warlocks, they're part human, part of this world, born in it. They belong here. But demons come from other worlds. They're interdimensional parasites. They come to a world and use it up. They can't build, just destroy. They can't make, only use. They drain a place to ashes, and when it's dead, they move on to the next one. It's life they want. Not just your life or mine, but all the life of this world. It's rivers and cities, it's oceans, it's everything. And the only thing that stands between them and the destruction of all this is the Nephilim. Thoughts?
As you were reading that, I thought of the way that in our like current political climate, which is like just trash, people talk about immigrants like as they come in here to like use our resources.
Yes. And think about that.
I didn't either until like right now, even though we talked about it like a little bit before we started recording. Like that is a way that people talk about like the reasons why we shouldn't let people immigrate to our country. Mm-hmm. As if they're just coming here to use our resources and like they're just going to move on to the next place once they've used it all up.
And I think it definitely, that's dovetail or is connected in really significant ways to how capitalism makes you think about resources. Mm-hmm. With like this scarcity that you're competing for resources, right, rather than more of like an abundance.
Or like competing way for of jobs.
Exactly. About, and it's not like, what's interesting is like settler colonialism and white supremacist capitalism say those sorts of things, and yet they are the ones who use up all the resources, right, and burn things to ash and then move on to the next place where they can get different resources. So it's like this cognitive dissonance between what they're accusing other people of, and yet they're the ones who are doing the thing that they're accusing other people of, where in reality like indigenous communities are the ones who have that radically different relationship to resources.
Right. Well, and it's interesting, too, when you think about the fact that the Shadow Hunters kill demons and turn them to ash to send them back to where they came from. It's kind of like, no, you all are the ones that are doing these things that you're, I don't know. It's hard because I know the demons are supposed to be bad. But at the same time, I think Clary has a point, and I don't know, I don't remember that we meet any good demons. Maybe we do, maybe we don't in future books. But if part, why humans are so shitty, like they're the worst. Like why would you think that it was the human in them, in the downworlders, that made them good?
I'm gonna throw out a parallel here, and I want to hear what you think.
Okay.
Are the Shadow Hunters basically just border patrol agents and or ICE?
Yeah. Yes, they are. I guess it's hard because the Shadow Hunters are not supposed to kill any downworlders who haven't done anything wrong.
So those are like the vampires, warlocks, part demon people.
Mm-hmm. but it's also kind of strange that, like, the punishment for doing one small wrong thing, I'm not clear on what all their rules are, like, that punishment is death, and the Shadow Hunters are, like, judge and executioner. Like, that doesn't seem...
It's a vigilante justice with no sort of, like, process, legal process.
Especially because, like, Alec, Isabel, and Jace are, like, running around New York City, like, killing demons in, like, teen clubs. Like, what the fuck are you guys doing? And, like, who's in charge of you? Like, who's making sure you're killing the right people? Like, this is... It's all
kind of... Where are the checks and balances?
Yeah, exactly. It just seems a little out of control. Like, 16-year-old shouldn't be deciding who lives or dies, you know?
Yeah, agreed. Also, Ice is only 4 years older than this book.
Oh, interesting. Didn't know that.
Complicated. No, Skater Boy by Avril Lavigne is older than Ice.
I did not know that.
2003.
Wow.
Hashtag abolish Ice. The Circle wants to, quote, preserve the purity of the bloodlines of Idris, end quote, but also keep the moral world safe from downworlders and demons. They collapse demons and downworlders into the exact same category because they have any sort of demon blood. So preserve the purity of the bloodlines of Idris, and yet they themselves are hybrids between angels and humans. So it's like you want to talk about purity, but you don't want to, like, own up to the fact that you don't have a pure bloodline yourself. What? This is striking me as, like, Voldemort being a, like, half wizard, half muggle, and then just, like, going down the rabbit hole of essentially racial purity.
They're passing.
Yeah, that's true.
That, I think...
Well, like, Hitler was part Jewish, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think... I wonder if they, like, resent that part of them that doesn't, like, make them special.
It's just really interesting that, like, they've taken their Shadow Hunter identity to be this, like, pure aspirational thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that way it seems that they value hybridity and mixing, but at the same time it's like if you're mixed with evil, but like who decides what's evil?
They do. That's the problem,
right?
I think that they think the more like godlike you are, so like because they have angel blood, that's what makes them special, and the mundanes are not, like, they can't handle the truth of the world, and that's why they, like, look down on them.
Yeah. It's interesting that a lot of the books that we're reading have these discourses of purity as the core center of the ideologies of the villain characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Saran in Children of Blood and Bone wants to stamp out magic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. And so I'm conflicted about the Shadow Hunters as whether they're villains or not.
Yeah.
Clearly some of them are. I mean, obviously the Circle, like, is supposed to be,
yeah,
villains.
Yeah. They're like a villain faction within, like, good people, I guess, is what we're supposed to think.
I don't know. It's very complicated. It's very murky, yeah, morally, which I think makes it interesting to talk about, actually.
Yeah, for sure. I do think books for young people often, like, put people in these categories of, like, black and white, not racially, but, like, good versus evil. And, like, try to complicate that to, like, show the world is not just one or the other. Like, there is this gray space in the middle. And I think that's what the Shadow Hunters are supposed to be. Like, they're in the middle. They're obviously doing bad things.
Right.
But it's hard because they're also, like, deciding what's morally right and wrong. Let's talk about Alec.
Jesse has written Alec ... in her episode script.
Because there's just so many things wrong with Alec. And I want to like him for, like, representational reasons, but he's just, like, the shittiest person. He's a bad friend to Jace. I mean, like, I guess we'll probably talk about later, like, how he's in love with Jace, and that's fine, but I'm like, but Jace doesn't love you back, so, like, let him live his life. Like, let him be with Clary if that's what he wants. I mean, they can't because they're, like, siblings, but you know what I mean?
Yes. But maybe they're not.
Can't say either way.
He spits some of the, like, most vitriolic, hateful things.
Yeah. Yeah.
At Clary. I was like, you're mundane, you're worth nothing, and all that. Oh, yeah, that was hard to read.
And he gets physically violent with her, which was also, like, not because he's a dude, like, I don't care about that, like, that he, like, identifies as male, but I'm like, you don't get to put your hands on another person without them being like, put your hands on me, you know, like, and so, like, for him to do that to someone he knows is, like, one, going through this really hard time, like, her mom's been kidnapped, she doesn't know where her mom is, and she's, like, finding out all this stuff, and he's just, like, what matters most is that you don't tell Jace that I'm in love with him, even though she didn't say she was going to. What made me so mad.
It was definitely a reaction because he feels threatened.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's why he lashes out. Mm-hmm. But regardless of intent, what, and then, yeah.
Ugh. Well, if I was Clary, it would have been bad.
I would have done things very differently.
Oh, my gosh.
I got my black belt when I was 16, so that wouldn't have been.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that. I also did karate.
I did taekwondo.
So cool. We have more in common than I, like, even realize sometimes.
This is friendship in real time, listeners.
I know. Kelly's probably catfishing me. She's not even who she says she is. Some elaborate plan to steal my life.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
I'm going to read you this quote, and I want to know what you think. So Clary is saying this to Valentine. Valentine's telling her, we're shadow hunters, so that means we have to be killers. You have to accept that. And she goes, demon hunters, demon killers, not murderers. There's a difference. Is there a difference?
I think maybe there's a difference in that it's hard because I think the shadow hunters are deciding what's morally right and wrong. I think it's okay if... I think they're demon hunters if they're getting rid of demons who are doing bad things or who are, like, you know, like, inhabiting, like, Dorothea.
Right.
Like, that's fine. But I don't remember why they killed that kid who's in Pandemonium at the beginning. And I'm like, what the fuck did he do? Like, why does he need to die? You know? So, but I guess Jace says that they're just sending them back to their dimension.
But they killed him.
Yeah. But does he...
Yeah. Do they actually die?
Oh, no. It's the greater demons. They go back to their dimension. The lesser demons die.
Actually die.
Yeah. So I think they're demon hunters when they're doing something that's preventing the demons taking over someone else. They're murderers when they're, like, just killing that kid in Pandemonium.
I guess why I keep bringing these sorts of things up is because I resist this, like, good versus evil. Yeah. Premise that I think we're supposed to buy into.
Yeah.
And it's just really not that convincing for me. I don't know. Are you gonna get mad if I go down
your rabbit hole?
Okay. this might be like a pattern, listeners. So Nietzsche in Jesse's just laughing at me. Nietzsche in Beyond Good and Evil and on the genealogy of morals questions this, like, objective, scare quotes, good versus evil. Like, your subject position determines what you view as good versus evil. And so then he gets into, like, unraveling what Christianity thinks is good versus evil. He was, like, he was pretty anti-Christianity. But I don't know. So it's just, like, I don't believe in the fiction of, like, objectivity, I guess. I just believe that everything's so much more complicated than good versus evil. And it's not like I don't know. This is something I'm still working out.
Yeah. It's hard because I don't want to get into, like, moral relativism where it's like, it's relative right to your culture. And then it's like, well, then what the Nazis did was fine. Like,
no.
You know, and that's the hard part because it's like some things seem objectively evil, but, like, but why? That's the problem. The why is what I don't know.
Right. I think to me, the demons kind of strike me as more non-human animals, because mm-hmm. humans are animals, right?
Yeah.
So, like, in animal studies, they make the distinction between human animals and non-human animals, and so, like, judging non-human animals for what they do is, like, honestly doesn't make, like, logical sense because they're responding to instincts. It's not like a tiger is bad if it kills someone.
They probably deserve it.
Or, like, sharks are, or it's not like a shark is bad.
Right.
In the moral sense, if it, like, bites someone who's swimming,
yeah,
it's responding to, like, natural instincts. So I'm just, like, curious how these good, evil, moral positions graft onto something that doesn't seem to even respond to that logic at all right. in its own existence.
But it's hard then because, like, are the Shadowhunters doing the wrong thing by, like, killing a parasite that's inside of a person? Like, if a demon possesses a person and they kill that demon, like, they're kind of doing the right thing, right?
Yeah. I'm going to turn... Listeners are going to think I'm this, like, demon advocate.
I know. Kelly's a devil worshiper. She said, bring all the demons.
Shit, you heard it here first.
It's not true.
We interrupt these deep cuts to bring you Show Us Your Fix. Which character do you think deserves their own storyline? Let us know by finding us on Twitter or Instagram at JKMagicPod. I've written in all caps several times, Magnus, 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 the end.
She really wants the Magnus thing. I think there's a book for you then.
Yay!
Okay, back to the deep cuts. Because just as one does not simply walk into Mordor, one does not simply read fantasy without talking about representation of race, class, and gender. This is our segment about power and bodies and how they relate. All right, let's talk about race first.
We're going to start it off.
I wrote race first, so that's what we're going to talk about first. So we see a lot of people of color who are downworlders, and I don't remember if we get any POC Shadowhunters later in the series, but I thought by having the downworlders as POCs and the Circle trying to, quote, cleanse the world of them, the parallels between white supremacists and the Circle were well fleshed out, and even without Clary, like, pointing that out, that they were, like, a fascist group.
I really like that she actually did point it out.
I was surprised. I think in a book that was, like, I don't want to say not written for teens, but, like, in a book written for adults, they wouldn't have said that, because I'm like, dude, you didn't need to say that. We got it. But I don't know if I would have at, like, 17. I don't know if I got that, you know? Without them saying it.
Yeah, I don't know. 10 years on.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's easier now.
I mean, probably. But I like that the character, that it shows the 15-year-old thinking critically out loud yeah. and calling that shit out.
It was kind of frustrating, too, though. I mean, because they have, like, demon blood and we're supposed to associate the demons with bad. I'm like, what are you trying to say here?
Also, the up versus down. I mean, that's so loaded, too.
Yeah.
About who gets to live higher up.
Yeah, do all the downworlders live in, like, lower Manhattan, you know, like, like, how does this all work?
I don't know. We're going to talk about the race class intersections, of course.
Yeah, there were just, okay, so there were some really strange descriptions of color in this book. So Jace is sometimes described as having brown skin. That's on page 253. Magnus is described as having golden skin on page 224 and then having white hands on page 227.
And we know what Jesse and Kelly, what JK's Magic thinks about golden skin. I love it as an objective concept, but I don't know what it racially means.
Exactly. And then, so
maybe I should just be more okay with racial ambiguity and not default to whiteness.
Yeah, but I think that's totally fine, except that the author is like, golden skin, white hands. Like, I'm like, what? Like,
is he wearing gloves?
Does he have that? What's that condition called? You know, where your skin you have, like, different colors.
Vitiligo.
Yeah,
I have to look it up. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not remembering what it's called.
Vitiligo.
Yeah.
Which is just different colored skin.
Yeah.
Patches.
But they don't say that. And so the descriptions didn't really line up, and it was super annoying. Like, I was so annoyed every time I saw, obviously, because I wrote down a bunch of page numbers to be like, this is all the places that don't make sense.
It's interesting and probably unsurprising that I didn't really notice that.
Well, I wrote down in my notes at one point, like, could Jace be a person of color? Like, he has blonde hair, but, like, there are brown people.
People can bleach their hair.
Also, well, he says his hair is naturally blonde, but there are brown people with blonde hair, so that's possible. But then he looks like Clary and Jocelyn/Valentine.
But they say they don't look alike, that Jace and Clary don't look alike.
Well, I mean, Clary has if they have hair. The same parents, then they'd probably be similar in color, at least.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it was really frustrating. I'm like, can you
the lack of continuity was frustrating for you.
Yeah, and I don't think it was meant to be confusing in any way, but it was annoying to me. Very annoying.
I think I'm like interrogating this in myself and like in the actual moment, like, why didn't I pay attention to this? Probably because I just was like defaulting everyone to white.
Yeah.
Well, calling myself out, listeners.
But you've also seen the movie. So sometimes when you've seen the movie, you do like picture those characters you saw then in the place of the characters.
That's a good point. I don't know if I was really doing that because I honestly, it's one of those movies where you watch it and I probably could watch it again and being like, have I even seen this movie before? It wasn't a very memorable film for me.
You're hurting my heart. I don't picture any of the characters from the movie except Jamie Campbell Bauer. So other than that, they're whoever.
We spoke a little bit about racial purity before, but the Shadowhunters are hybrids. They're not even pure. I don't know. This is like, I'm just mentioning it here so we can move on, I guess. There's definite parallels between downworlders and their lower class status. Vampires and werewolves live in dilapidated buildings on like, quote, bad parts of town, it seems like. Like they show up at the Hotel du Mort, and nice pun, Cassandra Clare. And then Raphael, the little kid, is like, this isn't a good part of town. You shouldn't be here. And there's like trash everywhere and it's dark. And I don't know, just a lot of intersecting descriptions that seem to be associated with like lower class areas of places.
Especially because the Shadowhunters live in like this like old church, which is obviously like very nice, and it's like got all this artwork, and they have like
clean, they have the beautiful library.
Oh, they have a library
with a spiral staircase. Goals.
Yeah, I think that was definitely.
And also when we see them at Magnus's party, they're just depicted as grimier. They have less hygiene. They're just not as clean.
There's dirt on the windows of like Magnus's, like on his windows.
Yeah, I think that is really telling and important, that like the actual hygiene and cleanliness of these people is questioned.
Yeah.
And there was one moment right before they're going into the Renwick, is that what that asylum is called?
Yeah.
Where all of the werewolf pack, or whatever they're called, changes in front of Clary while they're like just about to go battle the Forsaken. And Clary's instinct to, quote, run away when she's suddenly surrounded by wolves. And it just struck me. I just couldn't help but think of like how like white people internalize feelings of like being bodily threatened bodily when they're around people of color, like how people default to like crossing the street. And it's so interesting because I've like done this in my neighborhood because I'm walking my dogs and I want to be like, I just don't want my dogs to bark to like my dogs bark at everyone. Like, this is me wanting to be absolved of like not being a bad white person.
Yeah. I'll say that you're not. I don't think you are from my experience.
But that just that moment, I think that like really captures sometimes what can actually happen in like this racialized system where white people are also having a racialized experience, right? They're being taught to like worry for their bodily harm. And when in reality, like white people have done way more bad things to people of color than the other way around.
But then it's also interesting when you think about it, if like the downworlders are supposed to be like the minority groups, like they're the people of color, and then turning them into animals is kind of also I didn't think about that till you said about how they turn into wolves. And I'm like, oh yeah, you turn them into animals. Like,
not good. To be fair, it's like the lore of the werewolf is associated with that. But there is like total racial connotation. Same with the vampires, right? They turn into bats.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting because I don't know if Cassandra Clare did this purposefully because the werewolves turn into animals, but we don't really see POCs as the werewolves, just as like the vampires and Magnus. So maybe she tried to separate those two things by like not making the werewolves the people who turn into animals POCs, so that it didn't come off as like racist.
Yeah, I don't know. Also envisioned the werewolves all wearing like plaid, being like 90s grunge.
I think that's from the movie. I think they're all
also like, I think I'm conflating Luke Lucien with Luke from Gilmore Girls, and he only wears plaid.
I didn't think about that. In the movie, though, I think he's like, he drives a pickup truck and he's like wearing plaid, like button down, and so are the other werewolves.
I don't know why, but like plaid was definitely like plaid around the waist, like a plaid flannel.
I didn't think about this until right now. The movie doesn't, I don't think the movie shows female werewolves. We're going to have to talk about this movie sometime. But there definitely are female werewolves. And we get a cool badass one, I think, in the next book.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. Because the only female werewolf we had was made to go get the healing kit.
And she
sacrifices herself. And Luke is like, she's only a downworlder.
Yeah.
So, fuck that. No.
I mean, I kind of think he said that to, like, to make a point to Clary. But still, I was like, dude.
To, like, test her to make sure that she's not a shitty person.
It seemed like it, but I'm like, you also have known her your whole life. Like,
yeah, I don't know. That, she's a child. That moment was weird for me.
I thought so too.
Anyway, so the instinct to run away. Also, maybe we could, I just think of this right now, but how Witch Please posits the theory that lycanthropy can be made to like a parallel HIV AIDS.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that really applies in this particular book.
I mean, it kind of makes sense because Luke does talk about how you can become a werewolf, one by being bitten or one by being born one, which is like, that's how HIV AIDS is spread. You're either born with it because you got it from a parent or someone infects you.
No, that's fair. Yeah, like the hereditary slash contagious nature of the disease. Like, it's lycanthropy is a disease. It's like it's characterized as, right?
Right. So yeah, that makes sense, those parallels. Although I don't think we see like Luke really trying to keep Clary away from them in any way.
And I think Witch Please like comes back to the depictions of Remus Lupin as like sickly and like super pale and like, I don't know.
Yeah.
As having parallels to representations of people with more advanced stage HIV AIDS.
Which we don't really get here because like all of the downworlders seem to be fairly strong.
All skinny.
All skinny. Yeah. Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah.
We get a little info about class in Shadowhunter Society specifically throughout the novel, and it's like sprinkled throughout. So, for example, when Clary and Luke break into the old asylum and are in the room with unconscious Jocelyn, Pangborn, one of Valentine's henchmen, says something about Jocelyn always being a bitch to him and that he attributes her disdain as stemming from her upper class status. Also, we hear about Jocelyn and Valentine living on her parents' estate, quote unquote. And also Luke mentioned that he didn't come from a well-connected family. So there are certain, we see a little bit of this, and I'm sure that this will probably be more well-developed later on. And another thing that really struck me is that the Lightwoods get a lighter sentence in Hodge because of their connections to higher-ups in Shadowhunter Society, and that's exactly how class in the prison system operate.
Yeah. I always thought of the Lightwoods as having, I know Hodge mentions their, like, their connection to people with higher status, but I always thought it was because he had, or they had children. Like, they had Alec already. Because the Clave also doesn't seem to be looking for Jocelyn, and I wonder if it's because they know she has a child. And that was always weird to me that they weren't looking for her as a member of the Circle and the person who was married to Valentine.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, because I always assumed it was as a way to protect Alec, but now I don't know.
But if, like, of course, Hodge has fewer connections, so he can't advocate for himself as effectively, so he gets a harsher punishment.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
That's totally how this operates.
Yeah, for sure. No surprises there. We also see, like, I didn't write this down because I kind of, like, forgot about it, but, like, Alec and, we see Clary and Simon. Like, they're two kids who live in New York and are, like, running around just doing their own thing. She's going to, like, some summer art program. Like, they're pretty well-off kids.
Simon practices in someone's garage? Do people have garages?
In fucking New York? I mean, maybe in...
In Manhattan?
I don't think so. Maybe in, like, Long Island? I don't know. Yeah, he goes to summer camp every summer. Like,
I guess like we do get these little nuggets of information about they have some sort of class privilege at least.
They go to a school called St. Xavier's, which makes me think it's a private school. Not 100% sure, but
yeah, and also pretty cool if Jocelyn can make a living being an artist.
Yeah, like she talks about selling. Like Clary's like just sell some of the stocks or whatever that dad had, but before she realizes Valentine is her dad.
Yeah, that's true. Why do they have like mundane world stocks? How does money work? Do they have real world? Do they have like mundane world money?
I don't know. But either way, like,
I mean, they have an estate.
Yeah.
Or they had one.
Yeah. Either way, like, all around, like, for the most part, these are, like, kind of upper-class kids. Even, like, Simon and Clary.
Yeah.
So, just living in New York, doing whatever they want. There's quite a bit of misogyny in this book. We see it a lot with Alec, with his interactions with Clary. Although I'm not sure that doesn't stem from his, like, love of Jace. But also women just now being allowed to fight as Shadowhunters.
And also everyone bitching about Isabel's cooking and then no one else making an effort. They're like, we'll get takeout. And Jace is, like, railing against her cooking skills or lack thereof.
Yeah.
I was like, well, then why don't you learn how to do it, asshole?
True.
Feed your damn self.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, they rail against it and yet almost, like, expect to be given food.
Right.
So it's like, what the hell?
Well, and Jace makes the comment that that Isabel's mom, Maurice, I think, she cooks when she's there.
Yeah, and that her mom specifically didn't teach Isabel how to cook
because
she didn't want her to be, like, typecast into there.
Yeah.
Into that role. But at the same time, Isabel, for some reason or another, still feels thrust into that role. Does she enjoy it?
I don't know. I think Jace makes a comment about how Isabel's used to being the only girl around, and she does have these very, like, normative depictions of, like, what femininity means. So she, like, wants to dress well, she wants to look pretty, like, nothing's wrong with those things, obviously, but I think she's supposed, like, that's how we see her, like, pitted against Clary, because Clary doesn't feel beautiful.
I think we're supposed to code her. I think the novel codes her as, like, frumpier. Almost.
Yeah. Clary, yeah. Yeah, and Isabel's, like, the pretty one.
Right.
And so she's supposed to, like, fall into these, like, female gender norms.
This stuff tails into this, like, Clary-Izzy, like, conflict, I guess. Clary hates Izzy because she's beautiful. And Jace says something about Izzy always wanting to be, quote, thin and delicate, like Clary. Like, Izzy didn't like to be as tall, didn't like that she was as tall as the other boys or something.
Yeah.
And Izzy seems not to like Clary. And I just was like, I was reading these scenes and I was like, can we just, like, stop with the women or competition narratives?
Yeah.
It's not to say that it doesn't happen in real life. I know it does. But I'm betting that this Izzy-Clary relationship changes throughout the course of the series. But either way, this aspect, like, super bothered me. And I think maybe it's because it, like, hits home for me, particularly right now when I'm trying to, like, unlearn this scarcity mindset that says that another woman's success implies my own failure, which is, like, totally not true.
Right.
But that's honestly how, like, patriarchal systems keep women from swelling, keep the ranks from swelling with women in, like, higher echelons, because they mean it's, like, only one woman's allowed.
Yeah.
And you're all fighting for one particular spot.
Right. And it's always, like, a spot among the boys, you know?
Right. And that you have to, like, be like the boys in order to gain access to that spot. It's just bringing up a lot of echoes from Ember in the Ashes for me, from Helene in Wyclef. But I just feel like the stereotype really restricts the ways female characters can be in relation to one another.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't happen as often with male characters.
No, because we don't see... I mean, we kind of see some, like, bickering, fighting between... Jace and Simon, but
because they're in a love triangle.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, are they, like, who's picking Simon?
Well, Clary might if she's her brother, or if he's a brother, or if Jace is her brother.
Yeah.
Anyways,
no, I agree. I was glad at the end where they kind of, like, decided they were going to be friends, but it was frustrating, like, while reading, to be like, you guys don't need to hate each other.
Like, that doesn't even have to be how a relationship begins between two women.
There's no reason for it, even, because in this world, Clary's just coming in and she's new, and Isabel has no reason to feel threatened. Like, Clary knows nothing, you know? She needs someone there to show her the ropes and help get her information and help her walk through this world. Like, why can't she be that person for her instead of Jace?
Right.
So it's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I guess I think this hit, this was like particularly, I bristled at this a lot because of like being in this point in my life where I'm really trying to interrogate those notions of scarcity.
We get gay characters.
Yay!
I feel like this is like one of the first books we've read that has like checked all our boxes for like representation. Okay, not all of them. That's not true. But it checks a lot. Like a lot. Even though I don't really like Alec in this book because he's kind of an asshole. I think this is the first book I read ever in my life that had a gay person who wasn't out. And so I didn't think about it then because I just didn't. But I really liked it a lot. I was glad.
Yeah. And well, we're recording this a few days after National Coming Out Day, which is October 11th. But also Magnus is gender nonconforming. Magnus forever. So queer. So here. I love it. I'm in love. He's awesome.
He's great. He is Baz. He's Baz from Carry On. They're so similar.
Just love. Oh, God, I just can't articulate how much I love them.
Which is funny because you don't get that much of him in this book, but you'll get more later, so you'll be pretty happy.
Okay. Well, I'm holding out for it.
I'm preparing
you. It's the only reason I'm reading on. Not really. I'm also want to know the spoilers. And there's one other thing about gender that I really want to talk about, which is Jace blaming Clary for his being distracted during the fight with the demon Abaddon, and which is why Jace chose, like, prioritized Clary's safety over Alec's safety when they're like Paranbatai or whatever that name is for, like,
fighting. The pear body.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just butchered that.
I listened to the audiobook, so one of the few times I listened to the audiobook and you did not. So I'm like, I know how to say some of the
words. So many role reversals in this episode, listeners. That this attitude of his is just like so frustrating. That's your own shame. That's your own issue, dude. Stop blaming the woman you're infatuated with for like your own shit.
It's also frustrating because Alec has Shadow Hunter training from the time he was a child. Of course you would protect Clary, who can't do any fighting, like, not that she can't fight, like, but she doesn't know how to fight demons. Alex
barely knows how to like hold a knife.
Yeah, she's like uncomfortable holding a knife. Like, of course you would save Clary over Alec. Alec should know what he's doing. Stop being a little shit.
Also, they couldn't give her like a 5-minute tutorial back at the institute about like how to not die.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it'd be that hard. Like, I mean, I've never stabbed anyone with a knife, but like, how hard could it be? You know? Or like, I don't know. It was annoying. Jace can also be kind of shitty. Yeah. Even though I really like him.
God, he can be so shitty.
Yeah. I think I have a thing for, like, the people with all the problems.
They're interesting.
I know. It's why I ship Hermione. Because Draco is, like, he's broken. I like the broken ones. I don't know what that says about me.
It's a pattern.
Yeah, not in real life. Let me just put that out there. In real life, that's not what I go for.
Bodies. We have a separate bodies section in this. One does not simply.
Yeah, because they talk about it a lot. And there is a lot of body shaming, like, from Clary. She talks about how there's no fat vampires. There's no ugly vampires. And she's continually comparing her body to Isabel's, even when she mentions, like, she eats a bunch of sandwiches, but she hasn't eaten in 3 days.
So she's, like, shaming herself for eating 3 sandwiches?
Shaming her. She, like, ate the whole plate of sandwiches, like, Madame Dorothea brought out, but she'd been unconscious for 3 days. Like, of course she's hungry. She's probably also lost, like, 20 pounds in that time, realistically. She compares herself to her mother. There's a quote on page 24. So this is like super early on. She says she knew she wasn't beautiful like her mother was. To be beautiful, you had to be willowy and tall. When you were as short as Clary was, just over 5 feet, you were cute. Not pretty or beautiful, but cute. Throw in carroty red hair and a full face of freckles, and she was Raggedy Ann to her mother's Barbie doll. And that was just like hurtful in so many ways. Like, to me as a short person, I'm like, wow, that's I don't know.
It just shows how much she's internalized these patriarchal notions of what's beautiful and what's not beautiful.
Yeah, and just like, I think it's hard because I do think those are the kinds of things you hear as a short person, as a person with red hair, as like, you know, like all the things. But I'm also just like, it's really sad that at like, she's not even 16 yet and she's like, I can't be beautiful because I don't look this way. That was sad.
That is sad.
Like, broke my heart a little.
And then Simon's comments about Clary.
Oh, yeah. Like, she's wearing a short dress. And I mean, I don't remember exactly what he said.
I don't know. It just gives the sense that, like, he doesn't approve. And he's like, well, congratulations. I don't care if you approve.
Yeah, my body, my choice. I'll wear what I want, you asshole. Like, he's totally slut-shaming her. And
the amount of clothes you wear has nothing to do, like, has no correspond, doesn't correspond at all to, like, a morality scale.
Yeah, and I don't know. I was just, like, I know he's, like, jealous because, obviously, Jace is giving her attention, and she is, like, welcoming that attention. But I'm also, like, too bad for you. Like, go fuck yourself, you know? Literally. I was just, like, so annoyed with him.
Yeah. But at the same time, Jace is totally, like, weaponizing. He knows how Simon feels about Clary.
Oh.
That's, like, one of the first interactions that he has with Clary. He's, like, professions of love
amuse me, love.
Especially when they're unrequited.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's, like, also, I don't know what that says about, like, Jace's relationship to his own masculinity, how he has to, like, make a show of it, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He does.
Also bodies, because Simon and Jace are depicted as, like, totally different. Simon mm-hmm. is, like, the nerd who plays in a band. And then Jace, if we're supposed to, like, interpret this cover, is, like, 8-pack ripped with some serious lats and, like...
And cool tattoos.
And cool tats.
Yeah. Like, he's super badass.
Yeah, the novel is clearly privileges his version of masculinity over
true.
Simon's.
Yeah.
That's messed up.
It is. Yeah, it was just, it was a lot. And I don't think we see this in books as much as often anymore. And probably in part because we're so much more aware of, like, the way we treat women and their bodies and men and their bodies too. Although I think to a lesser extent, we don't really take them into account as much.
Yeah, I think we definitely don't take men's relationship to their, like, physical bodies nearly. We don't talk about that nearly as much.
No. Yeah, we don't see, like,
I guess in, like, the fat positivity or, like, body positivity arenas, you see way more women.
Yeah. Well, and then,
like, where
we're still,
the,
like,
men?
Well, yeah, because we're still, like, but we need Chris Hemsworth to be on, like, the cover of this magazine.
Exactly.
Like, no.
Like Tess Holliday's allowed, but.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are there any plus size male models
that
are,
that,
like, aspirational?
Which means something, because I knew who you're talking about. Like, like, or Chris Pratt getting, like, super in shape to be, what's his face in Guardians of the Galaxy, but, like,
versus Andy on Parks and Rec.
Yeah, like, he can't be on the cover of, like, Men's Health, whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think that that's something that we don't really talk about that much.
No.
And it's definitely present in this novel and, like, also everywhere else.
Yeah.
We have a subsection called Parent Stuff, and we didn't really know where to put it. So here it is. So Jocelyn, one thing I want to talk about was Jocelyn protecting Clary from the Shadowhunter world by literally rewriting her entire history, her daughter's history. And it just, this made me think of what do specifically parents with a lot of different types of privilege, what are they shielding their children from? They don't, I guess their children have the privilege not to be seeing all these different types of oppressive patterns. Privilege directly affects how parents can protect their children and the ways they can protect their children. I'm thinking of, like, the talk, quote unquote, in Black or African American families about, you know, how their children should relate to police.
Yeah.
Wait, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, it feels like the thing for Jocelyn to do would be to have, you know, quote unquote, the talk with Clary, but hers would be different, obviously, because there's, like, demons in the world and people after her, I guess.
But also Jocelyn's, like, history, revisionist history, leaves Clary super helpless.
Yeah, like, she,
the minute Jocelyn's gone, Clary's like, it's good thing, like, serendipitously she happened upon some, like, teenage vigilantes.
Yeah. And then she has to take Hodge at his word because there's no Jocelyn around to tell Clary that Hodge was also part of the circle and should not be trusted.
Exactly. So I just wonder how much of this like revisionist history is actually helpful. I understand why parents do it. Well, I guess, you know, I had a kid, maybe I would like understand this way of thinking better. But I don't know. I don't think that's like doing your kids a favor.
Yeah. And obviously there are whole communities of people like the Black community who are like, no, you can't shield your kids from this stuff. Like, tell them or they could die.
Tell them and they still die.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like almost the situation that Clary's in, because it's like she literally has demons coming after her and like a mass murderer. And her mom was just like,
Who's her dad?
Yeah. Who is her dad?
I called that so early. I called that.
I know. Like, I was impressed.
Yeah, they said he was gone for 16 years. And I'm like, Clary's 16. I know how this is.
Yeah. Well, you were right. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just thought about that. I mean, you know, think about how privilege affects like the ways in which you can protect your children.
Yeah. And I think it's a bad thing to do. You're not protecting your child. You're just putting it off, you know.
And also your kid doesn't know about the struggles of people in other communities.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like they don't understand the diversity of experience.
Right.
I want to read this quote on page 417 because it struck me as an interesting way to describe a group of people who share an identity category. And it's when Clary is seeing the werewolves all together for the first time and they're not changed. So this is what it says. The werewolves walking behind him looked like completely ordinary people, Clary thought. If she'd seen them all together in a group somewhere, she might have thought that they knew each other somehow. There was a certain non-physical resemblance, a bluntness to their gazes, a forcefulness to their expressions. She might have thought they were farmers, since they looked more sunburned, lean, and raw-boned than your average city dweller. Or maybe she would have taken them for a biker gang, but they looked nothing like monsters. It just struck me as an interesting way of perhaps, like, physically, a suggestion that maybe you can see the things that someone has gone through physically. By, like, the look in their eye or about, like, the way they carry themselves. I thought this was, like, an interesting, very subtle way to describe a shared experience.
And there's something about it, too, like, Clary's need to put people in these different groups that stands out to me in that. Like, she needs a way to be able to identify what these different groups are just by looking at them. Like, for some reason, that is important to her.
Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about it that way before.
Me either until just now. But, yeah, I think I get it in the fact that Clary is like learning so many different things. Like this book probably takes place over like
2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And she has learned about vampires and fairies and like demons and angels and vampires and
werewolves and warlocks and witches and
so many things. Like you kind of do. I think you would feel this need to start like categorizing things or figuring out a way to put people in categories so you knew who you were dealing with on site.
Yeah, it's like you're working with this framework of knowledge you already have, mm-hmm. and you're trying to like build on top right. of it.
Especially
in your first introductory phase yeah. versus later on when you've actually been inducted into this, you know, knowledge base, then you have room for a little bit more nuance and don't necessarily need to make those sorts of you don't have to collapse things into right. categories the same way.
Especially because Clary seems to have some trouble, like where Jace and Alec and Isabel and Luke seem to be able to tell, like see the glamours more quickly because of the block on her mind. I think she needs it even more because she doesn't see through the glamours without like concentrating on them.
Yeah, what a mind fuck. You're not being able to tell what's real and what's not in your entire life. Ugh, no.
Mm. That might speak to like mental illness in some way as well.
Yeah. Finally, it's time for Shipwrecked, a segment about asexuality, sexuality, sex, romance, and relationships. And sometimes we take liberties and do some shipping of our own.
So we get our gay characters, which we already talked about a little bit, but we didn't really talk about like the treatment of gay shadow hunters within the Clave and how awful it is.
Can you expand on that?
Yeah. So Isabel talks about how like when Clary asks Isabel if I'm mixing up my people a little bit.
From Love, Simon.
Yeah. And in my head, for some reason, Alec and Simon look similar. I don't know why. When Clary asks Isabel if Alec is gay, and Isabel talks about how he is, but she they don't want anyone to know because they don't know how the Clave will handle it, and she thinks they won't take it well. That was like really sad, and I kind of wonder why. Like, in a world with all these different things, like, why is gayness like your nope?
I think part of it might come from, at least in like Shadowhunter culture, their numbers are being depleted, and so it might be this obsession with like sex for procreation, and so gay desire obviously doesn't connect with that in the exact same ways as heterosexual desire. It doesn't like produce children. It's sex just for sex. I mean, it's not like gay couples can't have kids, you know what I mean? Yeah. But like, it definitely doesn't, it like resists that paradigm of like, oh, we're getting together and then inevitably we're going to procreate.
Right. I think I wrote it in my notes somewhere about how like this is a very Christian view, but I want to like not say just Christian, but like kind of a religious view, like sex for anything but procreation is not like worthy of your time, which is interesting because that, because their power comes down from angels, like it just complicates that religious aspect of their world so much.
Yeah, I think how much the Clave prioritizes. I would imagine that it prioritizes procreation because that's the sort of crisis happening in Shadowhunter culture.
Right, especially because they don't have the mortal cup anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. But either way, that was like frustrating to me. Like, obviously it's part of the world, but still, I'm like, guys, it's 2007. Mm-hmm. In your world, it's 2007. So I'm like, no, this is not okay. It's not okay at all.
Definitely not. There are also laws against Shadowhunters marrying mundanes. So I guess laws against miscegenation are like a thing that keeps cropping up in the books that we're reading.
Yeah. What the fuck is going on? I feel like this is all like, this feels like targeted towards me a little bit, and it's hurtful.
Potentially, a union of a Shadowhunter and a mundane could produce a Shadowhunter child, so...
I don't see why not.
I don't understand why they wouldn't.
Obviously, it can, because Hodge doesn't seem to think it's strange that Clary could have had a mundane father and a Shadowhunter mother and still be able to, like, take the runes and not turn into the Forsaken, so obviously it's possible.
Right. Anyway, I don't know. It just struck me as like a through line of a lot of the books that we're reading.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so there's this quote in the book that has like stuck with me for like 10 plus years now, and I don't know why. I should say that I can be kind of cynical, so that might be why. So the quote is, "To love is to destroy, and that to be love is to be the one destroyed." I have to say, talking about this quote in general, that I think Jace and Valentine slash his dad have it backward. Like, I think that's maybe why it stuck out to me so much. To like, I'm like, no, like, if you're the one doing the loving, like, that's the hard part, like, to love someone, especially like that doesn't love you back. So I don't know, this quote just has always stuck out to me so much.
And to sacrifice out of love, loving is the risky part.
Yeah, and that's why I think, no, it's like, to love is to be the one destroyed, you know, when you're the one who is being loved, you're the one with the power to like to destroy things, you know what I mean, to like hurt someone.
Yeah, that's right. You could weaponize that.
Yeah,
and
that's what Valentine
use
does
it for evil.
That's what Valentine does with Jace. He like uses Jace's love for his father, for him, you know, for Valentine, as a weapon. It gets worse later.
Yeah, that's true. And then he also, I mean, and Jocelyn wasn't feeling safe in her marriage.
Right.
Right. And he knew that she was connected to him and they were, you know, they had children together.
Yeah.
That's, I agree with you that that is backwards.
Yeah.
And
it seems cynical to say something like that. But.
And also love in general is just, it strikes me as such like a creative endeavor in that it like produces so much, it generates so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very similar to what we see happening with Voldemort and Harry Potter. About how he doesn't understand the power of love, and Dumbledore's always like, love, Harry, you can love.
Maybe that's the problem, like all the these books we read put like love as like this all-powerful, like high ranking like thing. Maybe it's not as important as the books make it out to be.
Or certainly doesn't, maybe that it's kind of like lip service to that idea,
right?
Because then why are you killing Dumbledore's? It's just this like, it doesn't really fit. It doesn't all fit seamlessly together. It's kind of like a, like not walking the walk sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's definitely the, also Helene in Decides Not to Love in yeah. Number in the Ashes. And yeah, the sort of the default to wanting to cut oneself off from emotional connection as like a protective mechanism. Right. Jace does it.
Yeah.
Like he says he doesn't love things.
Yeah. But it makes sense. Like, of course, that's what you would do because like loving something gives that thing so much power.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why books hurt me so much, because I love them so much. For a book that shies away from sex, swearing, anything, I don't know, so many things, it's like so surprising and like mind-blowing that they're like, let's have some incest.
Does the book actually take on incest? Because it doesn't, we don't see the characters like processing that.
We're not there yet.
Info dump.
We'll get more next book.
That's just like a large, large reveal.
And yeah, we don't see them do with it at all. As a matter of fact, they're like, let's hang out. Let's go on this motorcycle ride. It'll be fun. Like, let's not talk about the fact that we made out and we're siblings. Like,
yeah,
that would, I'd be like, I can never see you again.
Funnily enough, I was hanging out with my brother this morning, and I mentioned that incest is a part of the book I'm reading for the podcast I was about mm-hmm. to go record, which we're doing right now. And he made this comment about how incest is actually, like, you can put it on, like, the kink spectrum, mm-hmm. too, as, like, one of the most deviant types mm-hmm. of sexual desire possible. Mm-hmm. And so maybe thinking about it in that way, that also does then make it really interesting to your point.
Yeah.
Why there's basically only, like, a makeout sesh,
yeah,
and then you have incest thrown in there. It's like, whoa, such a huge
yeah
abyss between that sort of like super deviant, really taboo sexual desire slash sexuality.
Yeah. Because like when you watch like Game of Thrones, like they start with that incest real upfront, and that like sets the stage for you just being like, this is gonna be like a shit show, like all kinds of bad things are going to happen in this story. Like, that's how you prepare for it. And this book saves it till the very end. And then they just are like, all right, we're not going to talk about it anymore. And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
All y'all need to go to therapy. Stat.
Y'all need more than therapy, because, like, you made out with your brother. I don't know. I have brothers. Maybe that, like, I mean, you too.
I mean, so do I.
So maybe that I'm just like, like, you know, I'm like, I'm going to throw up. Like,
this reminds me, there was a House episode.
Oh, yeah. I love that episode so much.
It's such a good episode.
It's a good
episode. It really does dramatize. It dramatizes this dynamic, though.
Yeah.
Where it's like you're almost like.
But in that House episode, they were like in a relationship.
Like committed those relationship.
Two characters. Yeah. I mean, I know they're true. Like teenagers, but still, like they're in a relationship. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that House episode.
I don't
episode.
Know. I think that like. At least what we can, I don't, like, I'm not going to come to any conclusions here, obviously, because I don't, haven't read the rest of the series. Yeah. I'm not convinced that they're actually siblings. I think that's bullshit. I think that's a red herring, and I'm not convinced.
I won't tell you.
I feel very convicted that I'm right, and I don't even know the spoilers. I haven't even looked it up on Wikipedia or anything.
Do you do that?
No, not, I mean, sometimes. I've been known to do that before. When I'm like, I've read this book one, and I'm not finishing this series.
Oh, yeah, that but, I get that.
I think, like, at least what we can say is that it's, like, so not dark and twisty. I don't know what to say. It's just, like, how do you even talk about it?
I don't know.
How do you even process? How do you even talk about it? It's one of those things that just, like, resists any sort of discussion.
And honestly, like, if this were me in Clary's place, I probably wouldn't talk about it. I'd probably just, like, never see them again. I would ghost all of them. I would ghost this whole world. I wouldn't become a shadow hunter. I'd be like, peace out, bitches. Like, I can't. Nope. Like, that would be my...
I have to go live my other life.
Yeah, my other life. Magnus, please put this spell back on me. I don't want to see this anymore. Like, it's just, it's intense.
The last thing I want to say... specifically about Shipwrecked is that no means no, Hodge, page 334, he talks about how where there's love, there's also hate, and if love's unrequited, then that's really dangerous. And it's like, or you have a different reaction to someone saying that they're not into you and they don't reciprocate your feelings. You believe them, you accept it, you do your own work on the inside. And then you come out the other side. And I'm not saying that process isn't going to be hard or take a while, but just like no means no. You don't have to, like, play the victim.
Well, we see that kind of Alec, I think, knows that Jace doesn't have those kinds of feelings for him, but he's not, like, forcing himself on Jace because
exactly.
It's what what Alec wants.
Right.
There's no excuse for Valentine then forcing himself on Jocelyn. Because that's the thing when you think about it. She knew something was going on. She didn't want to be with him anymore. And she's pregnant. Like, I'm not convinced he didn't rape her.
Yeah. This is giving me major Riverdale, Hermione, and Hiram Lodge.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Connections.
I didn't think about that, but yes.
Like, she's a prisoner in her relationship. Like,
probably a prisoner in her own home. I bet she's not allowed to see certain
people.
The
man in the family is pulling all the strings. He uses their children and her for his own ends.
Yeah. He thinks that Luke, like, turned Jocelyn. Valentine thinks that Luke turned Jocelyn against him, which is something you hear people who are perpetuating abuse say, like, you know.
Yeah, like policing the other person's, you know,
relationships
and sex, right? And that Hermione and Fred Andrews get together, and then Hiram holds
spoilers,
that against
Riverdale
her.
Spoilers.
Oh, yeah, sorry. We'll put that in the...
I'll put it in the show notes. Sexy times. No sexy times. A kiss between Jace and Clary.
Between siblings.
Between siblings. Let's not call that sexy times.
But I do want to say that Clary, after, so Simon opens the door to find Jace and Clary kissing, siblings aside, like incest aside.
Because Simon doesn't know that.
Yeah, no one knows
no
that.
No one knows that.
No one knows it at that point. And Clary apologizes to no one in particular, the narrative says, and also everyone after Simon, like, finds them. And it's just like, girl, no, this just, like, grates against me so bad when women apologize and we don't have to.
And you're, like, not responsible for how Simon feels. Like, that's not your responsibility.
Like, and Jace is hot.
Yeah. So
look at those tats.
Look at all of him. Yeah. Yeah. I just am
no,
like,
no apologies.
Also, I don't really like Simon, so I'm kind of like, fuck off, dude. Now we're going to talk about writing style, narration, characterization, plot structure, and basically whatever else comes to mind in a segment called Kill Your Darlings. Third-person POV for YA. I forgot that the book was like this. For some reason, I always imagine it from Clary's point of view, like first-person point of view. And it's unusual for YA these days.
Yeah, the narrative voice is... The narrative perspective shifts a lot, and that kind of disoriented me. So we have is like this almost third-person, semi-omniscient, non-reliable narrator, and what happens is the internal focalization changes,
which is confusing,
right? So it's not technically a first person perspective, but we do get access to, like, Clary's thoughts and feelings. But then at other moments we get access to Jace's thoughts and feelings about when Clary comes into the room, but it doesn't seem to, like, orient us as to why that shifts. It's not like a multiple POV
right
with, like, different characters for different chapters.
And especially confusing because, okay, this is, like, a big pet peeve of mine, all authors, let me just tell you, is when you have, like, a line of dialogue and then not the person talking, but you have a different person's reaction to that dialogue on the same line. That is so fucking confusing. And it happened to me just now because I'm reading A Torch Against the Night, and a couple times they'll put, like, someone else's, like, thoughts or actions or reactions on the same line of dialogue as someone else talking, and it's really confusing, especially in third person.
But at least those chapters are, like, named for whose internal thoughts you have
access
to. Yeah,
in A Torch Against the Night, so it's a little easier. But, like, in a book like this, whenever that happened, I'm like, whose reaction is this? And now you didn't tell me who was talking. Who was talking? It's very confusing.
Yeah, that was a bit disorienting. The narrative switches. The narration switches.
And we do have an unreliable narrator. I can say that for sure.
Yeah. There's a quote on page 416 that I wanted to share because it's an example of why I am really digging Cassandra Clare's writing in this book. So this is when Clary is about to go into the Renwick with all the other werewolves. Her feet hit the dry packed dirt, sending up puffs of dust. The cars that had been following them were pulling up one by one, forming a sort of circle around Luke's truck. Their headlights swept across her view, lighting the chain link fence to white silver. Beyond the fence, the hospital itself was a ruin bathed in harsh light that pointed out its dilapidated state, the roofless walls jutting up from the uneven ground like broken teeth, the crenellated stone parapets overgrown with a green carpet of ivy. So, I don't know, that I just saw that paragraph and I'm like, that's a good example of why I think this writing is super vibrant. It's just so much detail. You can tell, like, the word choice is just a lot more deliberate, I would say, deliberately crafted in order to give you a much more vibrant and detailed picture of what this world is supposed to be like.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder if setting it in like contemporary times makes that easier for an author or harder, because obviously she's making up places that don't exist within our real world in a real place that we could like go visit. But I do think her descriptions are like spot on, and I think it has helped like movie, TV show or not picture these characters like really like they like I have a definite idea of what they look like in my head, you know.
It was interesting because I actually have a better idea of like the descriptions of the spaces, mm-hmm. I guess, than the characters themselves.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know. And because we only get like comments about what they wear.
Yeah.
And their personalities. I don't know. I don't have that much of a picture of what these characters look like in my head.
Maybe it's because I've read like all the books and I've read them multiple times.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's kind of like they're cemented.
Yeah, it's kind of still information for me.
Yeah. I forgot that YA used to be more clean. No good swear words. They're like alluding to the swear words they're saying without actually saying them.
Yeah, like Clary's about to swear and Jace is like, no swearing in a church.
I'm like, that's, no.
You wrote this and I was like, yeah, fuck that.
I know I said fuck a lot of times this episode, but also like, it's their words.
Our fucking podcast.
I know. We'll do what we want. It's explicit. It's going to get worse when we get to Sarah J. Maas.
You mean better?
Yes. Better, more swear words, more explicit. We should read some passages. No, I'm just kidding. I cannot do that.
Recommend if you like contemporary urban fantasy.
Yeah.
I would say.
Magical stories that take place in our world. Sometimes they feel more real to me, even though I don't read that many of them. I really like it.
Feel closer, temporally and geographically, because, I mean, they're set in Earth, like on Earth, in a time period that we're connected to.
I think sometimes, like, the urban fantasies make it easier to, like, I don't know. When I was a kid, I really liked, I read books that took place in our world, and it made me think, well, these things could be possible. Like, maybe I can't see these things, but maybe they exist. And I think contemporary fantasy makes that like more real in your mind. Thanks for listening to JK It's Magic. We'll be back in 2 weeks for a discussion of Torch Against the Night by Saba Tahir, the second book in an Ember in the Ashes series. And watch out for the occasional mini-sode about a range of fantasy adjacent topics.
You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at JKMagicPod. Post or tweet about the show using the hashtag CriticallyReading. Do you have an idea for a book that we should add to our TBR? Email us at JKMagicPod@gmail.com. We would love to hear your suggestions.
Know a friend who would enjoy the podcast? Please spread the word. You can subscribe to JK It's Magic on the podcast app of your choice. And if you're feeling benevolent, we'd really appreciate it if you would rate and review the show. See you in a fortnight.
JK It's Magic is recorded on land traditionally belonging to the Cheyenne, Ute, and Arapaho Native peoples.